Marty Moss Cohen, welcome to Radio Times. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie is back in the news. Here's what he said last week, suggesting that voters in his state should have their say on gay marriage through a referendum rather than a vote by the legislature. He referenced the fight for voting rights in the South.
I think people would have been happy to have a referendum, you know, on civil rights rather than fighting and dying in the streets in the South. It was our political institutions that were holding things back.
Civil rights icon and Congressman John Lewis went to New Jersey and denounced the governor, saying that if he and others had relied on referendums to end segregation in the South, quote, we'd probably still be waiting. Christie first called his comments inartful, and then he apologized. Nonetheless, the issue of whether gay marriage should be decided by voters or through the legislative process in New Jersey still stands, and it's our topic for today's Radio Times. Let me introduce our two guests. Michael Patrick Carroll is a state assemblyman representing New Jersey's 25th district since 1996. He currently serves on the Housing and Local Government Committee and the Judiciary Committee. And Michael Patrick Carroll, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Pleasure is mine.
Also with us is Ronald Chen, Vice Dean and Clinical Professor of Law at Rutgers School of Law in Newark. He served for 4 years as the Public Advocate of New Jersey, also as a member of Governor Corzine's Cabinet. And Ronald Chen, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Morning, Marty.
And Ron, let me begin with you. Why is this a legislative matter and not a matter to be put to the voters?
Well, Marty, like I think almost all policy issues in a representative democracy, we, the people, vote for our representatives to become informed on issues and make policy decisions. We don't have a tradition of establishing, of sending all controversial issues to the people for referendum. And especially in the area of individual rights, where it's the interest usually of a minority that's being protected, it is not appropriate, I think, in my view, to send that to a majority vote for resolution.
Michael, let me turn to you. Why is this an issue that should be put before the New Jersey voters?
The assertion has been that this particular civil right is fundamental. In New Jersey, when we wish to recognize a fundamental right, we put it in the Constitution. And the only way to put something in the Constitution is by a plebiscite. So if this is, in fact, a fundamental right, then the people themselves have to recognize it, and it should be done through a referendum.
Well, let me give you a chance to respond to that. Ron Chen, what's your response?
Well, whether or not it's a fundamental right or not in the Constitution, that's an issue for the courts. Right now, all the legislature is asking itself is whether, as a matter of policy, it wants to enact this, so we don't have to get into whether it is it has to be in the Constitution. The legislature, as our elected representatives, can enact this because it thinks it's a good policy decision to make regardless.
Michael?
Well, I must respectfully disagree with my old law school classmates that it's the judiciary's right or obligation to recognize the fundamental right. The ability to recognize the fundamental right rests exclusively with the people. Either the right is in the Constitution or it is not. If it is, then the courts get to interpret what the people intended to do. But if it's not, and I submit to you that no one sitting back in 1947 thought that's what they were doing when they drafted this document, then it's not there. And so it's not a matter for the judiciary, it's a matter for the people.
Well, let me go back to you, Ryan. I mean, do you see gay marriage as a civil rights issue, as a fundamental rights issue?
Well, I do. And I think it's already there. It's embedded in the right that does exist in both the federal and the state constitution, which is the right to equality. But my point is that we don't have to get there today on whether the legislature has the power to do this. The legislature enacts a lot of things that don't involve fundamental rights, perfectly within its power to do so. I think historically it will show, results will show that individual rights do not do well when we commit them to a transient voting majority, especially the right to equality. It's inherent in the right to equality that a minority is seeking something the majority has, and it is, frankly, human nature for a majority to be resistant to that. If we're looking to the ultimate wisdom of the people in fashioning the Constitution, both the federal or the state, it is that they knew that simply submitting issues, particularly issues that are going to arouse passions, in the populace is not the best way to do it. They enacted a representative Republican form of government that's Republican with a small r, Michael.
Yes, I knew where you were going, Mr. Dean.
Fair enough. Go ahead, Ron.
Republican form of government as the best way of representative democracy to have the people's interests served.
And Michael, I do want to get back to you, but to you, Ron, according to a Quinnipiac poll looking at New Jersey voters, 52% of them favor gay marriage. Doesn't that tell you that at least a small majority of people in New Jersey would vote yes on a referendum?
That may be. It may or may not be. Who knows what would happen in an actual referendum? One practical side effect if we go to referendum is that a lot of money is going to get pushed into political advertisements, and who knows where that will end. But I'm actually more concerned if we move aside for the moment just on the issue specific in issue of marriage equality, mm-hmm. just the setting the precedent of making individual rights subject to a popular vote, I think is disturbing to me. Which one is next, and who decides which types of rights or policy issues get up, put up for public referendum? Second Amendment gun rights, rights to reproductive freedom, speech. Who decides when the people get to weigh in whether something is included within their notion of fundamental right or not? It's a mechanism that I just don't think would work very well.
Well, Michael, let me give you a chance to weigh in on that. Looking at this as a fundamental right and whether, I guess, the public can be trusted to vote on that right.
Well, that's an interesting question. Can the people be trusted to rule themselves? The short answer to what Dean Chen said about who decides what goes on the ballot is we do. That's how we do the constitutional amendments in the state of New Jersey. There's no referendum or no initiative process. So if the people of the members of the legislature think a provision of the Constitution needs to be changed, we put it up there. I'm a little bit upset that Ron would even so much as suggest that the Quinnipiac poll is not absolutely reliable, given that my father runs it.
I don't think that was a personal attack on you or your father, Michael.
I felt it personally. So, coming back to the idea of the Constitution being talking about equality, there's no provision in the New Jersey Constitution that I'm aware of, and perhaps the dean can correct me, that requires equality. Article 1, paragraph 5 says that no person shall be denied certain rights based upon particular statuses, which are religious principles, race, color, ancestry, or national origin. Now, if the people who wrote and ratified the Constitution wanted to go beyond that, they certainly had the ability to do so. The answer to the question is that fundamental rights get stuck in the Constitution. That's how it's done. Not to say, by the way, that we in the legislature don't have the power to act as the dean is suggesting we should. We do. But again, if it's declared to be a constitutional right, it has to come from somewhere. That means the people have had to have put it there at some point in the past. I submit that they haven't done it this far. Certainly, it's very difficult to look at the people in 1947 and said, yeah, they intended to protect the right to marry a person of the same sex when they wrote the document in 1947. So again, could we do it? Yeah, sure. We're going to discuss that coming on Thursday. But the question isn't whether can we, the question is whether we should.
Well, let me make sure I understand, Michael, what you're saying is that gays and lesbians in New Jersey do not have the right to marry.
That's correct.
And that's according to your reading of the Constitution.
I think it's a good note. The document says what it says. You know, so I guess you could say, yes, it's my subjective reading to it. But, I mean, the answer to the question is that you know, rights which sleep in a document for 60 or 70 years without ever being noticed tend not to be there. And you know, when we look at the appropriate way to interpret a legal document is in light of the intention of the people who drafted it, or who ratified it in this case. And if it managed to avoid being detected from 1947 to today or so, then it's probably not there.
What do you think, Ronald Chen?
Well, Assemblyman Carroll is right. The New Jersey Constitution does not use the term equal protection the way the federal Constitution does. But and we can go through a long history on this. Article 1, paragraph 1 has always been construed to include as a component of it a requirement that that all the people be subject to the equal protection of the laws, and that's where the right to marriage equality, its advocates say, comes from. That again is an issue for the constitutional interpretation for the courts. But I would agree with Mike on this. The legislators also have in their responsibilities both a right and a duty to consider those principles when they adopt legislation. That's what I think the legislature is trying to do in this case, or at least a majority of the legislature, when it is enacting marriage equality, prompted by a judicial decision, but due to its own independent decision that this is what we need to promote the constitutional norm that is at least implied in our state constitution. And that, I think, is exactly how the process should work, rather than, in a way, abdicate the responsibilities and telling the people, you decide, and not exercise the legislative role that we've entrusted to them.
Well, let me just quickly ask you a question, though, Ron-Chen. New Jersey has civil unions for gay and lesbian couples. Why is that not enough?
Well, you know, I will admit, my thinking on this has evolved. At some point, it appeared to a lot of people this was really a big argument about use of a word, the M word.
The M word meaning marriage.
Marriage, and, you know, at some point, the libertarian movement says maybe the legislature shouldn't be dictating how people use language. People can use language however they want. However, I think as we've seen the Civil Unions Act work in the last 5 years, I have become convinced it's just not working. It is, in fact, by using a separate term for unions between same-sex couples as opposed to heterosexual couples, it is, in fact, perpetuating the inferiority, the distinction. And that's essentially the gist of the letter that 127 law professors sent to the legislature last week, and I will be sending it to the Assembly Committee if we haven't already done so this week as well.
Well, yes,
Civil Unions
like
Act just doesn't
there,
work
Dean.
Right now.
Yeah, hold on. We have about a minute before our first break here. Michael, let me just give you a chance to respond to that. Is this a semantic argument?
In part, but I want to go back to something that the dean said about Article 1, Section 1. I just want to read it for the people out there. He says, all persons are by nature free and independent and have certain natural and inalienable rights, among which are those of enjoying and defending life and liberty, of acquiring, possessing, and protecting property, and of pursuing and obtaining safety and happiness. Now, if that contains any positive rights, in the sense of a judicially enforceable right, I'm somewhat surprised by it. I went back and looked at the statements about that from 1947. It really wasn't intended to create anything more than sort of a general statement, like a preamble. Now, the courts have used it because it gives them the right to do so, or the power to do so, the apparent power to do so, and they haven't been shy about taking it. But I don't think that statute, that section can be interpreted legitimately as providing any positive rights.
Well, let's hold on to that thought. Only we have to take a very short break, and we are talking about an issue of concern and of interest to New Jersey, whether gay marriage should be decided by voters in New Jersey or through the legislative process. Our guests are Michael Patrick Carroll, a state assemblyman representing New Jersey's 25th District, and Ronald Chen, vice dean and clinical professor of law at Rutgers School of Law. We'll be right back.
Widener supports WHYY. At Widener University, graduate courses are taught with real-life leadership experiences in a stimulating educational environment. In addition to their academic programs, Widener is committed to delivering the means for professional advancement and personal growth students seek in a graduate program, while accommodating work schedules through a variety of graduate degrees, including nursing, education, higher education, and more. Widener University. Widener Leadership Works.
I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. This is the winter membership campaign here at WHYY. We remind you several times a year that if you listen to WHYY, take that next step and become a supporter. We have an ambitious goal, 8,000 pledges, and we can make that goal if you make that call at 1-888-345-9499, or you can pledge online at WHYY.org. Think of what you get on programs like Radio Times, in-depth interviews about local, national, and international news issues and events that matter to you. We also introduce you to interesting people and ideas. We believe that you're the kind of person who is curious about the world we live in. We also know it takes a lot of work to keep up on everything. So we do your homework for you. We track down guests, invite your phone calls to create a lively and informative conversation. You don't hear that on the radio every day. Make a call right now at 1-888-345-9499 or pledge online at WHYY.org. Thanks so much. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne with a question for our New Jersey listeners. Should gay marriage be put before the New Jersey voters or decided by the legislature? Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Getting two very different opinions from Michael Patrick Carroll, a state assemblyman representing New Jersey's 25th district, a job he's had since 1996. Also with us is Ronald Chen, Vice Dean and Clinical Professor of Law at Rutgers School of Law at Newark, and he served for 4 years as the Public Advocate of New Jersey. I should add that Michael Patrick Carroll serves on the Housing and Local Government Committee and the Judiciary Committee. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Michael, let me get you to respond to what John Lewis said. He was obviously criticizing Chris Christie, the Governor Christie, saying that if he and others in the South had waited for a referendum, you know, they might still be waiting today for the end of segregation. Essentially saying if you put this before the voters, they would not have voted to end, you know, black and white bathrooms, things like that. What do you say in response to that?
Again, at the end of the day, I'm not sure whether or not a plebiscite in Alabama would have been successful, but perhaps one nationwide would have been. And I think that's where the governor was going. It was basically that the moral conscience of the people, of the nation as a whole, had been sufficiently pricked, and that I think a plebiscite would have won. But he has a point. We don't do things like that. The constitutional rights on the national level are handled a different way. And remember, the 14th, the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments had already been adopted, as had the civil rights laws from the 1860s, which seemed to cover most of the issues that were nonetheless being ignored in the South. I mean, Dean Chen and I sat through all these constitutional law courses together back when, and I think it's pretty clear back that there wasn't any necessity for doing the plebiscite. Those rights already existed in the Constitution and in the civil rights laws that already existed. They were just being ignored.
But in a referendum, how does a referendum deal with bigotry or, in this case, since we're talking about gay marriage, even homophobia?
Sometimes it doesn't. You know, at the end of the day, the real question is, if you have a moral issue, which allegedly a civil right is, which is not specified anywhere, and the people oppose it, you're basically got a problem, because our government relies upon the willingness of the people to do the right thing. And there are times when, somebody's going to have to vote on this. Is it going to be the people? Is it going to be the courts? Is it going to be the legislature? How do we go about selecting which rights are going to be included? I think that's where Ron was going before. And the answer is that the legislature puts it before the people, and we trust the people to do the right thing. If at the end of the day we have decided now that the people can't be trusted, that they have to be ruled by salons in Trenton or in Washington, that says a lot about popular government. Maybe we made a mistake.
Well, Ron Chen, what do you think?
Well, you know, and this sounds harsh to say, but the United States has never been a direct democracy. It's always been a representative democracy. If you look at the Founding Fathers and the Constitution, which I know Mike Carroll does, frequently, it's clear. James Madison, the last thing he had in mind was the type of ancient Athens direct democracy where the people voted on everything. We guarantee to our people a republican form of government. And I think there is some agreement between Assemblyman Cal and I. Fundamental rights should not be subject to, or not necessary, certainly, and I don't think should be subject to a public referendum. We simply disagree on what those rights are, which is perhaps not surprising. But the principle that you subject any one individual or minority group's ability to enjoy a fundamental right, the principle that you subject that to a referendum is one I think possibly, Mike will speak for himself, we could agree on.
Well, let me just, though, ask you, just to put this into some context, Ron, when was the last time voters in New Jersey voted on a referendum?
Well, we vote on referenda frequently because for constitutional amendments. I won't say there's one on every ballot, but if you're talking about a referendum on a fundamental right like this, mm-hmm. Usually we move on a constitutional amendment that's in some structural detail that doesn't involve an individual right. I don't know when the last time was, but as I pointed out last week in the Senate Judiciary Committee, the people did vote on one individual right in 1915, which is the right of women to vote, and it lost pretty soundly. Only Ocean County voted to give women the right to vote in 1915, which may give credence to the belief that those who have power in the majority are usually reluctant to share it. It became moot a few years later when the federal constitution was amended. And I know people will say that was 1915, and we've grown since then. But now I think it's a little presumptuous to think that on big moral issues of equality and participation in government that we are so much better or more intelligent and sophisticated than our grandfathers were.
What do you think about that, Michael?
Well, the fact is that I would not dare to gainsay the dean's knowledge on federal constitutional matters, but the dean is also known as to be a progressive. And probably one of the biggest triumphs of the progressive movement at the end of the 19th and early 20th century was initiative and referendum, where many states do, in fact, permit the people to engage in direct democracy. New Jersey did not choose to go down that route when we adopted our Constitution in 1947, but we depend upon the people to decide whether a constitutional amendment is required or is necessary. We have one on the ballot this year. Now, admittedly, it deals with joint municipal courts, which is hardly an earth-shaking matter, but the simple fact of the matter is that when we in New Jersey wish to recognize a right, which I think the dean would admit is probably, at least at this point, has not been recognized as part of the federal constitution, because if it has, of course, at that point, all bets become moot in the New Jersey constitutional level. If it's not in the federal constitution, then it has to find its genesis in the state constitution. And if that's the case, the only way to put it there is by a plebiscite.
But do you think, and let me put this to you, Michael, because I know that the Senate Judiciary Committee voted for this same-sex marriage bill to go to the Senate. Governor Chris Christie has said that he would veto it. Are we just having an intellectual conversation here, or do you think that this really is a choice, an actual choice in New Jersey?
Well, what's wrong with an intellectual conversation?
Well, we have them all the time.
I'm in favor of such things.
I am as well. But I'm just saying, is anything actually really going to happen in New Jersey?
Like I said, my dad runs the Quinnipiac poll, and he tells me he's a very wise man, even if he is a Democrat, and he tells me there's nothing as certainly written in the book of fate than that sooner or later this issue will be laughed at. 10, 15 years now, because younger people simply don't agree with me. And sooner or later, it'll probably end up where they agree with Ron,
right.
and maybe even nationwide. But the fact of the matter is that doesn't change the question of whether it's good policy. We haven't gotten to that yet. Right now, the question is, who decides? If you want to discuss the question of is this or is this ain't good policy,
mm-hmm.
that's certainly something we can discuss. I think that's what the legislature is going to discuss. Is it good policy?
I completely agree with what you just said, but you also said an interesting thing about yourself. It sounds like you believe you're fighting a losing issue.
Probably. Sometimes one does have to stand up athwart against the tides of history, yelling stop, on the grounds that it's not a good idea. But at some point, it doesn't look like to me anyway as if 20 years down the line my side's going to prevail. It's possible people will listen to the pearls of my wisdom, but it's at least heretofore we have not been able to make our point, I think, as forcefully amongst younger people as we made it amongst older people.
Well, let me get you to respond to that, Ron Chen, and even this going back to the Quinnipiac poll and public opinion on this whole issue of marriage equality. Do you believe that the country is changing on this and more accepting of this?
Well, do I personally? Yes. Yes, I do, although on things involving the political movements of the people I yield to, Assemblyman Carroll, who is much more expert on this than I am. I'm sort of a simple country lawyer from Union County, and not an elected politician, and will never be one. But as to what's going to happen for right now, it was the root of the question. I mean, obviously, the legislature. I think it's pretty clear. The bill will pass out of the legislature. The governor said he's going to veto it, but offers this option. So I suppose the conventional wisdom would be for right now it's sort of a stalemate. I don't think the legislature is going to send this for constitutional amendment, and so the issue is going to lie there.
Because, and just this is just the way New Jersey works, which is that in order for it to be a referendum, the legislature has to agree to that, right, Ron?
Right. I think it's either 60% of both houses in the same session or a majority in two successive sessions before you can even put a constitutional amendment on the ballot. And I mean, the legislature does that, but it's usually for structural things, structure of government, whether it be municipal courts or how to approve a public indebtedness. Rather than saying should a certain minority group have an individual right or not.
And we are talking about an issue of interest and concern to New Jersey and New Jersey voters, whether gay marriage should be decided by voters through a referendum or through the legislative process. And we are talking with Ron Chen, Vice Dean, Clinical Professor of Law at Rutgers School of Law in Newark. He served for 4 years as the public advocate of New Jersey, a member of Governor Corzine's cabinet. Also with us is Michael Patrick Carroll, State Assemblyman. He's been representing New Jersey's 25th district since 1996, currently serves on the Housing and Local Government Committee and the Judiciary Committee, and we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Particularly interested in hearing from our New Jersey listeners. Well, we have Wayne from Quakertown, not exactly New Jersey, but go ahead, Wayne, you're on Radio Times.
Yes, I heard one of your speakers say that in our Republican democracy, we rely on people doing the right thing, but it only takes looking at history to see that very often the people do not do the right thing. How long did we have slavery in this country before it was abolished, and only then because of a very destructive war? And how long after that war was it before the civil rights laws and segregation was abolished? Another 100 years.
Let me take your point because it's a good one. I'm going to toss that first to Michael Patrick Carroll. Michael, your thoughts?
Well, the question is at the end of the day, if the question is, does America have reasons to be ashamed of its past in certain areas? Yes, of course. But what's the alternative? I mean, do we have very bright, say, law professors from Newark dictating what our fundamental rights will be, and the people just simply meekly follow along? That's not how we've done it. Traditionally, we've said the people are the ones who get to make fundamental law. Sometimes they get it wrong, but in a government which finds all of its, remember, the first three words of each constitution, we the people, they are the ones who are supposed to make the decisions on fundamental law. And if you believe that the people have got it wrong, then go out there and make your case. As I said before, I think that Ron and the people on the other side of this issue are making a good case to the people, and I think eventually they might win. But that's something, again, it's a case you have to make to the people.
Ron Chen, go ahead.
Well, you know, I would, Michael and I certainly agree. Ultimately, in our form of government, the people are sovereign. No one would question that. I certainly would not. But I think the people have made a very wise decision that the way they exercise their sovereignty is through this form of representative democracy, where we do make a decision. We go to the polls every November or otherwise and vote for the people who we expect are going to become informed on an issue, more informed than any of us have time to become informed on in our daily lives, and work in our best interest. And if we don't think they're doing that, we vote them out of office. That is the structure that I think the people have decided their sovereignty is best served by. But I certainly wouldn't disagree that ultimately, of course, the people's will are the form of the government. I'm trying to implement that, or arguing that that should be implemented by having our legislature make a decision that it is fully competent to make.
Well, but yeah. Ron, let me ask you about a couple of years ago, this issue came up. The legislature did not vote on this. There was then Governor Corzine, a Democrat. He said he was willing to sign a same-sex bill into law, and it didn't happen, and that's the legislature.
Right, and I was there then. I testified that time, too. It was a disappointment, and certain legislators have, a number of them have changed their minds. Legislators, as well as the people, are permitted. In fact, we hope that they evolve and their learning becomes more informed with time. So, right, it was a temporary disappointment, but that was then, and now we're at a situation where it appears the legislature is willing to make this move.
I hear a chuckle from you, Michael.
Well, yeah, we legislators have been known to change our minds now and again,
yes.
Even those of us on the far right. But, we spent the last 40 minutes talking about the process, which is all well and good. You know, who's going to make the decision? And you can debate the process as much as you want to, but ultimately I think the question comes down to the merits of the issue itself. And you know, if whether it's the legislature or whether the people, some group is going to vote on this, and therefore the question has to be whether or not the policy that is being advanced is a good one.
Let me get Neil from Huntington Valley to join us on Radio Times. And Neil, go ahead. You're on Radio Times. Go ahead.
I'd just like to comment on that last item, and I think you're missing the point of this whole cynical manipulation by Governor Christie. This has nothing to do with gay marriage. This is a tactic to get social conservatives to the polls in November with the hopes of continuing a trend that has happened in other states where they'll vote Republican, changing New Jersey from blue to red. And if the legislature does not allow the referendum, then he will point out to the public that, you know, he was willing to put it to a vote, but they don't trust the people. It's a masterful political ploy by Governor Christie, and that's all it is. It has nothing to do with gay marriage at this point.
Neil, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Michael Patrick Carroll, do you agree?
Well, no. I mean, I know the governor. I've known the governor for many, many years. Certainly, he's a politician. But it seems to me that in my long experience in New Jersey, being something of a social conservative on many issues, I have not noted a huge number of us there in this particular blue state. It's just you have California, New Jersey, New York, and then there's the vast middle ground in the middle. We're not a socially conservative state. So to put a socially conservative provision on the ballot doesn't strike me as necessarily a good idea from the perspective of a Republican. It's much more likely to turn out as many of the people on Ron's side of the issue as it is on ours.
What do you think, Ron?
Well, on the politics, I take the governor's explanation at face value. I disagree with the move, but I assume he has. I always assume anyone's good faith in why they want to do it that way. Obviously, if it did come to referendum, I would vote for it, and I would encourage other people to vote for it. I'm still more concerned about the mechanism of subjecting certain individual rights of a minority to a vote. As to what would actually happen in November, I don't know.
Mm. Well, let's take another short break. We'll get back to our conversation with Ron Chen, Michael Patrick Carroll, and we are debating and discussing an issue of interest to many people in New Jersey, the issue of whether gay marriage should be decided by voters or through the legislative process. We're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation. Just a couple open lines at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. I see a lot of callers from Pennsylvania. We want to hear from some people from New Jersey as well. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Penn Medicine supports WHYY. Doctors at Penn's Depression Research Unit have been studying the causes and treatment of mood disorders since 1964 and are currently performing research to develop improved treatments. Symptoms may include mood swings, low energy, and low motivation. Initial evaluations are offered to determine those who are eligible for treatment. More about Penn's Depression Research Unit at 215-662-3462. 215-662-3462.
I'm Marty Moscowane. It's the winter membership campaign. We're thrilled that you listen to WHYY. Now take that next step and become a supporter. 2012 is going to be a busy year politically speaking, and Radio Times and WHYY will keep you up to speed on the local and national races and informed about the issues. That's what we do. What you need to do is make a pledge of support right now by calling 1-888-345-9499 or pledge online at WHYY.org.
Celebrate the sweetness of the season on Saturday, February 11th, as WHYY hosts Chocolate, Philadelphia's premier Valentine's Day chocolate event. Enjoy an evening of live music and an exciting chocolate raffle while savoring every moment of this two-hour chocolate tasting event, which will feature unique sweets, delicious hors d'oeuvres, and decadent drinks to complement and enhance our chocolate theme. For more information and to RSVP, visit whyy.org/member experience.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. Let's get back to our callers at 1-888-477-9499. We have John from Levittown joining us. And, John, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
I guess the point I wanted to make was that marriage itself, the representative keeps mentioning plebiscites and how they modify the Constitution. The right to marry itself, I don't think, is actually in the Constitution. So why would you need to modify that with a referendum on the matter?
It's a good...
it's something that the legislature has, I mean, defines the parameters for marriage, like the minimum age for, you know, whether or not you can marry more than one person, you can, that sort of thing. It's well within the legislature's purview.
John, it's a good point. Let me give Michael a chance to respond. Go ahead.
Well, I don't disagree. I mean, but the point of the matter that you have to then face is that you cannot then argue that it's fundamental to marry if the legislature is entitled to exclude anybody it wants to from the definition. Which, by the way, is what's happened. I mean, that's the whole argument is that the definition is somehow a violation of fundamental rights, and fundamental rights go in the Constitution. If you want to define marriage to include more than one person or what have you, I imagine the legislature could probably do that, and I'd invite the argument towards that effect. But again, I think that the argument that Ron made a little while ago about equality and such along those lines, those are generally constitutional questions. Those are not statutory questions. Statutes generally draw distinctions all the time. And if the argument is that, again, coming back to the policy argument that we're going to debate on Thursday and then subsequently, if the argument is that the statute is wrong and the policy is wrong, fine, let's discuss that. But if the argument is that there is a fundamental right, then a statute is not the place to discuss it.
What do you think, Ron?
Well, I, if we were arguing before a court, if Mike Carroll and I were arguing before a court, we would be having this discussion of whether it's a fundamental right or not, and where in the Constitution it is. But this is before the legislature. I don't think we have to get to that level of discussion for the purposes of whether the legislature thinks this is a good policy move or not. There are lots of things the legislature bestows on the people that are not fundamental rights, but are just good ideas. I'm trying to think of a non-controversial example, but with Mike, who knows? I'll pick childhood health insurance or something like that.
Okay.
The legislature does it, and we don't have to get into this debate that Mike is describing would come up if we were arguing before a court.
Let me throw something else out, and you both referenced, we've been talking about a referendum versus legislation or the legislature, but what about a court ruling? And I know some supporters of gay marriage have filed suit in New Jersey. Could in the end this be decided by the New Jersey Supreme Court? Ron, can you respond quickly, and Michael as well, and then we'll get back to our callers.
Well, the court, obviously, Lewis v. Harris 5 years ago, said that there is a right to equivalent treatment, and that's what got us here. There have been a lot of people. This bill is sort of a recognition that hasn't worked yet. Civil unions, which came out of the case, haven't worked yet. There is suggestion that it should return to the New Jersey courts, but it's not going to happen anytime soon because it would have to start up again, start in trial-level courts and work its way up.
And, Michael, are you comfortable with courts making these decisions?
Well, I think the court should keep to it. That begs the entire issue. That gets back to the entire question of whether it's fundamental. If it is fundamental, if it already exists in the Constitution, our entire discussion is moot. And certainly I think that Ron would argue that Chief Justice Poritz's dissent in Harris, or I guess it was a concurring dissent, wasn't it, in which she basically said, let's cut through the chase and go and say, this is what the law shall be, that I imagine would have been would have solved his problem, would have solved ours. I believe that's illegitimate because I don't believe it's a fundamental right. I don't believe that it's included in the Constitution, and I think it should be a legislative policy to determine these things, and that's how it should have proceeded 5-10 years ago. So I want it to be clear that my view is that if you're discussing this as a fundamental right, then we should be going to a plebiscite. It should be in the Constitution, and the people get the right to vote on it. If we're discussing it as a policy, which the legislature is free to change or not as it sees fit, then it belongs in a statute.
Let me get Jay from Cherry Hill to join our conversation. And Jay, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Very interesting discussion, calling from Cherry Hill. Thanks. And my partner and I have been together for about 8 years, and I'm one of the few gay people in my circle who actually thinks maybe we should send this to a referendum. And I'd be really especially keen to send it to a referendum, the marriage equality question, if we could also put a question on the referendum tightening divorce laws. I think the results of those stacked together would be very, very revealing. And I'm just wondering, what are your guest thoughts on that?
Well, Michael Patrick Carroll,
Might even get my vote on that.
Really?
Because I am of the opinion that one of the more telling arguments, it's a practical argument that a lot of people make, and I don't want to insult anybody in particular, but I will anyway, and say that you've got a guy like Newt Gingrich who's had 3 wives, the last 2 of which were non-reproductive, and it makes it very difficult to defend the institution as a lifetime undertaking when people treat it as a mere convenience to be ditched at the most... I do divorce law, so I guess I shouldn't comment about this too much because it might cut my purses off. But the fact is people treat it as far too easy to get out of a marriage. Louisiana went to that covenant marriage a number of years ago. I think that was a good step in the right direction. Maybe we should look at these tightening up divorce laws because, I mean, if you go back and you look at the benefits that attend to marriage, most of them assumed lifetime undertakings. You know, whether it's pension benefits, whether it's alimony benefits or what have you, all these things arose on the assumption that it was a one-man, one-woman, one-time type deal. And I'm not entirely persuaded that, in fact, I am entirely persuaded that we've moved down the wrong road. I think that that we should be looking at making divorce a little bit more difficult to get, or maybe alternatively making marriage a little bit more difficult to get, or just make sure that they understand. Once you're in, the state is a partner to this contract. Unless you have a bloody good reason for getting out of it, we're not going to let you out of it.
Well, that's an interesting response. And just a quick question to you, Michael, are you saying that the marriage is for procreation?
Basically, yeah, that's the basic of it from way back when. I mean, if you take, for example, the general ban on marrying your sister or your mother. The thought was that you shouldn't have kids, and it assumes that you will. So, yes, marriage is basically an institution designed to create that entity, the family, best suited for the rearing of natural children.
Well, we're off a bit on a tangent, but Ron Chen, I'd be curious about your response and even Jay's call saying, put it, make it part of a referendum, but also include divorce. I mean, how far do you want to take this?
Yeah, I'm not sure, and I don't know if the caller is still on, which way he intended the divorce laws to go, make it easier or more difficult.
I think more difficult.
I think that's probably the example. At what point do we draw the line between what goes to the people and what does not? Obviously, I disagree with Mike respectfully that the role of marriage is simply for procreation. I think it's to recognize stable family relationships, monogamous relationships as being a societal benefit in itself. That's the only reason I think that the state has any business regulating in the area in the first place when you're talking about family intimate family relationships. But I guess I go back to my earlier comment. This is just not the type of thing that a majority should be able to dictate to individual couples the precise nature of their relationship.
And we're talking with Ron Chen and Michael Patrick Carroll about an issue of interest to New Jersey, whether gay marriage should be decided by voters or through the legislative process. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. I'm Marty Moscoane, and this is Radio Times.
And that's on WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Hello, I'm Dave Davies, alongside Radio Times producer Debbie Builder, taking just a few moments here to ask you to, you know what, take a step to support this terrific program and the other ones that you hear every day here on WHYY. By now, you probably know what you have to do. That's to get to the phone at 1-888-345-9499. You figure out what this service is worth and make that pledge. Or, of course, get your computer, go to our secure website, and do it at whyy.org. And you know what, Debbie? This is such a classic example of what's valuable about Radio Times. You take a topic that people feel passionately about. You mm-hmm. have two terrific guests who couldn't disagree with each other more, but listen. And so each guest gets a chance to explain what they think. Marty is probing but respectful, and you hear an exchange which is really edifying. It's just something you don't hear many places, and it's really worth something. Is that please don't take that for granted. Step up and make a pledge now.
Give us a call, 1-888-345-9499. This is exactly what Radio Times does so well. You hear two people from different sides, different perspectives, and talking about complex issues. And for me, this really helps me understand them, figure it out. You get analysis. You get both sides. Give us a call, 1-888-345-9499. Just yesterday, we did a debate about the Keystone XL pipeline, which, again, two people from opposite sides talking about it in an intelligent way. There's no shouting. You know, it's all just sort of a real discussion, a real intelligent debate. If you appreciate that, give us a call right now, 1-888-345-9499. Become a member. Renew your membership.
And there are a lot of ways to say thank you. We have volunteers that can explain all that to you. If you pledge at least $50 on a credit card, we'll throw in Newsweek every week for free. I love the WHYY umbrella for $120. It tells folks loud and proud who you are and keeps you really dry. But, of course, the real reason to do this is because you count on this service, because it's something special. You know, and I think, Debbie, Radio Times listeners are a real community. Not everybody has time to hear the show that often. But people who listen to it regularly realize what a terrific host Marty is. And I don't want you to blush, but what terrific producers it takes to get a hold of a subject, 10 of them a week, sort through all the millions of guests that you could have on, find the ones that are both knowledgeable but also respectful of the views of others, and get them there, get them in the studio, get them on the phone. It is really something that we shouldn't take for granted. I know I don't. I mean, so often there'll be some subject, fracking or whatever, that I haven't really paid enough attention to, and I said, you know what? Marty's going to get to that, and when she does, I'm going to make sure I get the podcast. Wow, it's special, it's cool, and it counts on you for support. If you're not supporting it, then your friends and neighbors are doing it for you. Step up and help them. The number is 1-888-345-9499, or, of course, on the web at whyy.org.
Yeah, Marty does 500 programs a year covering a whole range of topics. Actually, I was thinking about one of the reasons I got into public radio was I kind of couldn't commit to one thing because there's like just too many interesting things out there. And that's sort of what Radio Times does. I mean, whether it's politics in this primary season, you know, which is great to get thoughtful, intelligent analysis of, whether it's science, whether it's medicine, economics, health, the arts, Marty is going to be talking about it. Some of the most important, some of the most interesting issues of the day. Give us a call, 1-888-345-9499. If you can pledge, you know, $10 a month, $20 a month, whatever it is, we really appreciate it. It helps us continue to do these kinds of programs day after day. Thanks again, 1-888-345-9499, or you can go online too at whyy.org.
You know, after 25 years of Radio Times, I think folks at the show still pay attention to the calls that come in, both the emails about the show and also to what extent people respond when we do these pledge breaks, because, you know, it's a measure of of confidence in what's going on here, and a belief that it's special. And I will say that, you know, one of the things we've talked about is how Marty listens to her interviewer. She is respectful of the conversation. And the way we do these pledge breaks on Radio Times is a little different, and it is particularly respectful of the show. We don't interrupt you from the beginning of the show until almost the end, because we know the conversation has a flow. And it matters, and ideas need a little time to germinate. And so if you appreciate the fact that we give you most of this program interrupted during these fund drives and uninterrupted completely for most of the year, then I think it's worth a little pledge. Just figure out what it's worth to you. It's not hard. And then go to the phone at 1-888-345-9499. By now, of course, you know the number. Or get to the website at whyy.org.
Yeah, it really is a conversation. Before I came in here, I was talking to our next guest coming up in the next hour, Ross McPhee, who's this amazing mammologist. He goes to the polls, and he's written this incredible book about the race to the South Pole between Roald Amundsen and Scott. And, you know, I got to meet him and talk to him, and he's so fascinating. But that's, as a listener, what you get to do too. You get to sort of imagine you're sitting down there with Marty in the room, listening to them talk about all these amazing stories. And you get an hour of that, which is so rare these days, to have the time to give people a sort of chance to talk about ideas and their research and all these amazing stories. Give us a call. Support this station. Support what Marty does. Support all the other incredible shows, whether it's the amazing news reporting, whether it's Fresh Air, all the NPR programs we do. Give us a call whether we air, 1-888-345-9499. Again, 1-888-345-9499. It just takes a minute.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this next program, too, about the race to the South Pole, because it's a terrific adventure story. But it's also something about science. And it's, as I understand it, I'll listen and see if I'm right about this, the team that lost the race, in part because it took more time with the journey, had a more significant scientific impact, because they weren't just trying to plant the flag. They were trying to learn about the Antarctic. An example of the kind of thing that you probably wouldn't – you might not pick up that book, although now you might. But but Radio Times takes you places that you hadn't thought of but that really hit you, and it just happens so often. I want you to think for a moment about how many checks you write week in, week out, month in, month in, month out, to people that you don't care about. Not that you necessarily dislike, like the cable company or the electric company, but there are all these bills you got to write to take care of your life. But then now and then you get to write a check that means something to you, maybe to a charity that does work that you value, or a political candidate who says things you believe in. And you write that check and you think, you know, I like that. That felt good. That's what you're going to feel like after you make that call and make that pledge to support Marty and Debbie and the other producers here at Radio.